Hey there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Monday through Thursday, WBAI. Tuesday through Thursday, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial. Hey, you know the music in the background, the theme song, which we don't change because it's been there for so long, is Dreams of Children by Shadowfax. I'm going to let you hear this for just a little bit, and let me tell you something about it. A good friend of mine recommended recently that we should change the theme song to another one that I have, which is something I actually wrote and played myself. But I said no, you know, I thought about it. See, Chuck Greenberg, who is playing the music that you're listening to, one of the last things he did was give me permission to use this on our program. And then after that, he died. So I feel this is kind of an honor to him. Now, I'll keep it as long as I'm around. Nice, isn't it? Dreams of Children, Shadowfax. All right, Armand DeMille, you know, what are we asking for in life? What is it that we want in life? Well, we want to feel a little better. We want to feel good, don't we? We want to smile. Sometimes you got to feel bad before you feel good. Sometimes you got to take it on the chin just to see, you know, so that's reality, huh? And you keep doing that over and over again, you know. Now, some people get beaten all the way down by reality. They look at reality and they say, oh, it's just too much for me, I can't take it. And then other people can take it and they move with it and they learn a little bit and they feel a little better. What are we asking for in life? One of the things we're really asking for is to find a partner. To find one person, a brother or sister or friend, with whom we can hold a hand or hug or stand tall with. We mostly search for and imagine a partnership of equality, where we feel mutual respect, mutual love, an easy mutual dependency. That's what we mostly ask for, you know, one person. But it's tough, because we're not too good at picking. Carl Menninger once said, people pick the wrong people for the right things, and the right people for the wrong things. You know, think about that. How many times in your life have you chosen to be with somebody who might have been a really great partner, but you chose to be with them for sex only? Right? Or have you picked somebody else who might have been a great sex partner, but would have been a lousy love partner? Our past dominates our selection process. Our biological heritage alone makes us attracted to the most fit physically. You know, that's what we look like. We like the peacocks. We look for the most, whatever the most is. Like the sheep, we look for the ram with the biggest horns. Nature dictates a preference for physical attributes or power. You know, it could be just a person's famous, and that's enough. Give me power, give me vibrant, give me vital. That's what counts. So men build muscles, or they build money. The more, the better. Why? How many muscles do you need? No. The big muscles are to attract the female and to warn off the other male competitors. So we're kind of like, just like every animal on the planet. And women grow breasts, plastic breasts. Why? How much breast do you need anyway? Well, no, it's the breasts are there to have more men attracted, so you have less competition and greater selection. So here we are, men positioning themselves and women positioning themselves. Men going for the power, women going for the attractiveness. And I'm sorry, I mean, not all. It's all based on a very primitive instinct that comes from our still reptilian brain. What does being attractive mean? It means attracting others of the same species for mating, being attractive. That's our biological heritage, the biological imperative that gets in the way of good partner selection. We still go for boobs and brawn. You know, give us a go. Look at the beach, and that's where all the mating takes place. It gets in the way because often those who spend their lives building muscles or buying breasts or plastic surgery are not the kind who look any deeper than the skin. Appearances is first. All other things come next, if at all. Maybe that's okay by many of you. Good-looking is all you want. You've lived in an emotional isolation all your life, and you figure you just have to attend to your own emotional needs, like you always had. But you commit yourself to a life of emotional self-nurturance. You just never expect to get it from another person. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, talking about some of those knocks you get and how you could look at it a little differently. You know, some people hunt for the creature with the best cave or the best nest instead of muscle or breasts. Wealth is the human equivalent of good nests and caves. If we partner with such a good provider, then that's good enough. So biology's still at work, you know? Give me the guy with the muscles, give me the guy with the nest. Just like with birds, fish. Then comes another big part, our emotional childhood. If overcoming our biological urges for bigger muscles or breasts or caves or nests, if that wasn't tough enough, then we have to overcome the damages of the parenting that we got. The fear of intimacy, the fear of being overwhelmed and possessed, the fear of vulnerability, betrayal, distrust, the inability to express your needs as a kid, jealousy, paranoia, blind trust, the need to keep secrets, the need to deceive, the need to hide. All those things that destroy real relationships come straight from our childhood past, straight from the damage from childhood. So we search for a partner who is either exactly like our dad or mom, or exactly the opposite of dad or mom. It's the same thing. So if you're afraid of your mother's tendency to swallow you up, you take over your life completely, you either pick a totally submissive partner, or you select someone who's controlling, dominant, and you spend your life fighting them off, just like you did when you were a kid. So this is the way that we go through. We go through as partners, trying to pick partners, and we have two big issues here. One is we have to defeat our biological imperative, which is we cannot let our original impulse decide what we're going to choose. And the immediate impulse is going to be to attraction only. Right? The physical attraction, the attraction to either the money, wealth, power, the first three chakras is going to be the thing that we're going to be attracted to. And the second thing we have to deal with is the damages from our childhood. What did we decide as kids? How are we going to stay isolated? What kind of person are we going to find? And then we try to get through life. Now, one would imagine this is easy. You grow up. You find somebody, you settle down. It's not, friends. That's why it's not easy for you either. So if you love one person or two people and you're having difficulty with them, I'm trying to bring you some information and some stuff that can maybe help you understand a little better. You're not alone. You're not alone. I want to talk more about men. I want to talk more about men because I know about men because being a man and having spoken to a lot of men and worked with a lot of men, I really feel confident that I could talk about men. So I want to address this one more. And today I want to talk about men who love women but have no men friends. Real important. I also want to talk about women who love men but have no women friends. Now that's a problem. There's a sure sign of trouble when a man has no really close male friends. There are an awful lot of guys out there who are really miserable parenting. Usually their dad was a mean man or completely absent. Usually mom was the only comfort zone. These guys are usually only the only child or they had only sisters. Okay, so you're either the only, and the only male in the family. So they become great at relating to women. They have a sensitivity that other men do not have. They understand women. They're usually very charming, very romantic, but somehow always back out of commitment in a relationship. If they're married, they disappear. Sometimes they have affairs. But often they wind up being bachelors forever. No need to get married. They can part, always find a way to sidle up to you. You see, a part of them understands women so much that they become exactly what the woman needs for a short period of time. Then they get antsy. But if you're somebody who knows women that well, I think at times you relate to them almost in a sisterly way, in a way that knows them so well that you can be one of them almost, even though it's a very masculine way with them. So after they win the battle, after the romance is consummated, the real self begins to peek through, and it's usually an angry self. Well, what's he so angry about is the question, because he resents, even though he's a womanizer, meaning he focuses on women and he wants to have a lot of different women, he gets a woman, what's he so angry? Where's all this anger come from? Well, the anger is because he resents not having his dad. You see, guys like this grew up without a real dad. Men who don't have men friends had a lousy relationship with their fathers. Got it? That's easy enough, right? It makes sense. So they don't have male friends, so they go to women instead to get some kind of nurturance. But then why are they angry at the women? Well, you see, most guys who didn't have a decent mom, a father, in some way blame their moms for that. In some level. So then here they are, they get related to these symbolic mothers, which are these women they go out with, and they date these women, and then they're with these women, and they make love with them or have sex with them, and they even have a short-term relationship, and then they keep showing this anger appears. What is the anger about? Why are men so angry? Especially with their female counterparts, with their partners. Why? Why is that? Because they miss their daddies. Because he resents not having a father. He resents having to be his mother's husband, her confidant. Every man wants a daddy. Every man needs a brother. Big statement, because a lot of guys listening out there yesterday, you know, or today, or the weekend, sir, I don't need a daddy. What do I need a father for? I don't need a father. I'm a grown man. Every man needs a father. Every woman needs a mother. You need your mother. You know, you gotta belong to something, right? What do you think, we live without him? No, I grew up, I'm strong enough. A young man I knew called me the other day. It was such a precious thing. He called me up. This is a man's man. But he's a young guy who I consulted with over time, and he called me up and he said, Armand, I got to ask you a question. He asked me in a very deep voice. He's 41 years old now. He said, I got to ask you a question. You're the only guy I got to ask this to. He said, what are hemorrhoids? I almost cried when I heard his voice. He would never let himself ask that question to anybody. He says, I got a hemorrhoid. And I don't know anything about it. They want to operate on it. They want to do things. What am I supposed to do? He was being a man, you know. He was afraid to ask the question about it. Last year I had to get glasses. This year I got hemorrhoids. What's going on? Precious. Every man needs a father. But, you know, if we think about needing a father, and if you think about it, guys, the guys who are listening, and the women who are listening, and the people related to men who don't have fathers, just think about them. How, on some level, sad it must be to not have a daddy. Not have one. Many guys turning off the phone right now. You see, I'm losing listeners as we speak. If you're reaching for that dial, freeze that hand. Do not determine you can't afford to listen to this today because you've got to listen to the news or you got to hear the traffic report. Freeze those fingers because this is important stuff. You got to face it at some time in your life, friends. Listen, it's not so bad. Every man needs a daddy. Every woman needs a mommy. Bottom line, even if you grow up, even if you're an adult. Now, if you're an adult who has a daddy or a mommy, who has a mother or a father, and you feel fairly comfortable with them, imagine what it's like not having one in your life. For one reason or another, just imagine that. Be a woman and imagine what it's like to be a man who's alienated from his own father. What is that like? What is he like? This man doesn't have an idea of what it's like to be a father because he hated his father so much. His father was brutal with him, so he tends to be brutal. You know, he doesn't know what it's like. So if you don't have a good relationship with your dad, you really start off with a big negative in your life. If you're a man, You know, if you're a woman, it's a different thing. Of course, that's another handicap of sorts. But the same-sex parent is essential because they determine what you're going to be. If you're going to be a father in your life and you're going to grow up to be like a father, what are you going to do? You're going to say, well, what's a father like? Let me think about my father. Your father was a brutal man. He was an alcoholic. He was irresponsible. He was, you know, he ran all over the place. What do you think you become when you grow up? That's exactly what you become, what you imagined he was. You fight it, you hate it, but you wind up being that way. So every man needs it. See, if a father is distant or mean, a man doesn't learn how to develop the father inside himself. He has to reject this father. So what does he do? He aligns with his mother. That's what he does. He's really a mother in a father's body. The secret of his romantic charm is that he knows how to be a woman because on some level, he didn't have his dad to identify with. He became like his mother. You see what I mean? He knew his mother. Mom was the power. He learned about life from his mother's point of view. It's very confusing, but the reason he's so successful in romantic conquest is because he became what mother wanted him to be. Instead of developing his real maleness by learning from a close and loving father. You see, if you got a close and loving father, a thing kind of happens. It's an ease in the testosterone. You know, you get this testosterone, and you seem to get some honey with it. You know, you become a man who has a loving father, is strong, powerful, and gentle. A man without a loving father is either all gentle or all genital. No, all gentle or all powerful, one or the other, but rarely has a combination of the two. And a funny thing about these men, the men who don't have men friends and yet get very close to women, the funny thing about them is that they're the very same men who are always trying to prove their potency by satisfying women. You know, they call them womanizers if you want, but that's too harsh for me. I see the little boys inside, desperate and destitute, because they never had a father, so it's so sad. They don't have men friends because being with a man is relatively boring compared to being with a woman. Actually, it's frightening, being with a man. But they don't feel the fear. A man without a father is always secretly searching for him. That's the kind of desperation that gets triggered when they meet someone, a man that they like. But never having related to men, they don't know what to talk about. They tend to talk about things. They don't know how just to be with a man. They talk too hard. They talk about stupid things. You know, what do you think? How about the Mets? What are you going to talk about? Can't talk about your feelings. You can't talk about your hemorrhoids, right? What are you going to talk about? You feel awkward. Men who don't have male friends feel awkward with other men. Every man's a competitor. I know one man. I remember one man who used to go out, an older guy. He used to go out to a bar, where he would go to a bar and he would sit and he would be there mainly to meet women. And if a man spoke to him, he completely ignored him. He said, he'd turn his back to any guy who spoke to him. I'm here to meet women. What are you talking to me for? I have absolutely no value for you, a man friend. If you're one of those guys and you spend your time and you're looking for male friendship, try doing something simple, you know, like go to a gym together, go to a movie or a game together. You don't have to talk. A man who wants a man friend that doesn't know how to develop male friendship, do things together. Male friendship, friendship between men is often silent. You don't have to talk. You just need to be with him. It's like being with your father. You don't have to talk to your father. You just have to be with him. It's like being with your brother. You don't have to really talk. You don't need much. A little conversation is nice. It's being. And if you're a woman with a man who's friendship handicapped, you know, if you're a woman who doesn't have any women friends, your relationships also have a lot of trouble, and we're going to have to talk about that. This is Armand DeMille, with you at The Positive Mind, Tuesday through Thursday, here at WBAI. So we're talking about men who don't have male friends. We're talking about men without fathers. So, Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. It's important. It's important to learn about this. It's important to learn about this from the point of view of anybody who's being related to a man. If you have a man, one of the first questions I'd want to know if I were a woman dating a man or if I were a homosexual man dating a man looking for a relationship, I'd want to know what's your relationship with your father? What's it like? I'd want to know these questions just about anybody. Hey, you went out on a date yesterday. You go out on a date. Did anybody's parents come up in conversation? Did you ask him what was his parents like? What's his mom do? What's his father do? Did you find any attitudes? Did you listen beyond the words? You know, you would have heard a lot if you really listened. 212-209-2900 with the help of Michael G. Haskins. We're going to take some calls now and get back to this a little later. I want to talk a little later about the women who don't have male friends, because I think there's a lot of stuff in here worth hearing about. 212-209-2900. Let's hear from some men about their relationship with their fathers. Let's hear. I'd like to hear about your relationship with your father and how you think it impacts on you and your friendships today. Interesting conversation. I've never heard anybody talk about this on radio before, but this is WBAI in New York City, 99.5 FM. We tackle things that other people don't tackle. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi there.
I really enjoy your show, and I actually wanted to talk to you about my soon-to-be husband, who's exactly the way you just described.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear it.
No, he's a wonderful guy, but his father committed suicide when he was 2, so he never knew him, and he's a man who doesn't have many male friends. I mean, he has one close friend, really.
Well, that's something that he even has one close friend.
Yeah. Well, I think it's something that he's able to relate to me in a mature level, too.
Well, let me make this point clear. You see, a man without a father is wonderful at relating to women. So, I mean, from your point of view, of course it's great. But from you hearing this program, you're a little concerned. You're saying, well, you know, as I notice it, he does relate to me, but he doesn't have any close friends. He has one close friend, and he did lose his dad. How's it going to impact on your relationship? What do you think happens eventually? And that's a question you're asking, and I think it's a good one and a mature question to ask.
Right.
It's scary.
Yes, because one of the things he said definitely rings home. He's filled with a lot of anger. His mother wasn't a very doting mother. She was quite distant and always angry that her husband had committed suicide. So he's not very close to his mother at all. And I think when he gets angry with me, sometimes it's not appropriate to the situation, but I understand that it's because he hasn't really. I know sometimes you just push buttons and you confuse who you're with at that moment.
And what do you do about it when that happens?
Well, we've been together for almost a decade, and I'm only learning in the last really year or two not to react and just to kind of understand where it's coming from. But also, we've talked about how he feels about his mother, and he's actually working on getting a better relationship with her. And so we're working on it because we're also older. I mean, we're in our early 40s, so we're not that young anymore. And if we don't figure it out now, I think we never will.
Well, I think it's a good point, you know, and I think you make a very good point. If people really were in touch with their deeply loving selves, when they saw somebody getting inappropriately angry with them, what they would do is they would step back and they would say, okay, you know, I can see this person's bent out of shape. That's all right by me. For the moment, I'm not going to react to it. I'm not going to jump at it. As long as you're not burying your feelings, you know, as long as you're not burying your hurt, as long as you're not getting deliberately, personally assaulted, you know, because to feed that would be terrible. As long as the cost of your understanding was not the sacrifice of yourself. Now, when you were a kid, did you ever, what was your dad like?
Very overbearing, very strict, also massive temper. So I sort of feed into, I think, I know what it's like to be around someone when they get really, really angry. And
so
I tend to react.
Funny coincidence that you chose somebody else who's very angry, huh?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I know we end up doing that kind of a thing. My father also didn't have a father. He also grew up fatherless, so I'm beginning to understand, I think, my father better. It's such a stereotype, but through my relationship that I'm having now.
I understand. So you're understanding your father better. You're understanding your husband better. The only missing ingredient here, which I'm sure you're also working on, is understanding yourself better, because here you are in a perfect replication of what you grew up with, an irrational man yelling at you, and you having to be quiet about it, just what you did as a kid.
Right. And it certainly has enraged me, and so we've had this sort of dance that we do together where we're both, I think, reacting to each other, and you know, I realize now that we're not really reacting to each other, but that it just really pushes these buttons.
Well, you know, Harville Hendricks, a very interesting man, had a theory, and his theory was the following, and I like this. He said, we choose the people exactly like the people we had in childhood, and we choose them for a reason. We choose them not just because we're trying to repeat the damage that we had. We're choosing them because we want to be better at the game. We want to improve ourselves. We want to not be so vulnerable. So look how wonderful you're doing this for yourself. You had a rageful father. You were totally impotent with your rageful father. You couldn't do a thing, right? Now all you can do is feel bad, right, as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Now here you are, an adult, choosing a man who occasionally does the same thing, but instead of feeling bad, you're taking power over it. You're standing back. You're not reacting. You're not criticizing yourself. You're not getting depressed. So you're developing a power over the rageful person. You know, in effect, there's a great opportunity to grow here for you.
I agree, and I think there's a great opportunity not to grow, too. And I think people, I guess that's what's great about your program. I think people should realize that you could actually, it's very difficult, but it's also very, I guess, liberating to actually learn that you can sort of change, not change a person, but help them understand themselves and yourself in the process a lot better. Because my husband has met my father and knows how extremely difficult my father can be, and has often said, my God, I'm just like your father. And he's not nearly as bad, but I think he also realizes how bad it can be by seeing sort of a worst-case scenario.
I hear you. What's your name?
Beatrice.
Beatrice. Oh, Beatrice, have we spoken before?
Nope, never.
Right. It's another Beatrice. I will, to all the other Beatrices out there, Beatrice, welcome to WBAI. Thank you for calling in today.
Thanks.
I think you've said a great deal that really helps a lot of people as well from your point of view. And congratulations on your new marriage, and you'll keep growing, I'm sure, if you ever need help. Let me know.
Thank you so much, and thanks for taking my call.
Oh, sure. Okay, bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
This is Armand DeMille. It is The Positive Mind, Tuesday through Thursday, WBAI, in New York City, Pacifica Radio, listener-supported, exactly 1:30. How about a little music for Michael? How about we go back here for you? Here we go. How about a little music for Michael, as I call it? Thank you. suite, Paul Desmond, who used to be with Dave Brubeck, alto saxophone, and in case you're curious, the drummer, Connie Kay. Connie Kay, you know who that is, huh? The modern jazz quartet. And this is Armand DeMille with you. Positive Mind, Tuesday through Thursday, WBAI 99.5 FM. We are talking about men who grew up without a father. Men who have no dads and what that's like, or men who grew up alienated from their fathers and what it means in their advanced relationships. And yes, are you one of those guys? How did it reflect in you? Nobody thinks about it, you know? Nobody thinks about what it's like to have to be alienated from your father as a man, you know? As a woman, it's another story. We're going to talk about that at some time in the future. Women alienated from their mother. Oof, that's a gigantic story. Men alienated from men? Ooh. So 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi, Armand.
Hi there. Who is this?
This is Larry calling. I'm in Manhattan.
Hi, Larry.
Hi. I'm 38 years old, and my father died when I was 12. And I recently visited his gravesite for the first time since 1977.
What was that like?
Well, I took my son with me. It was pretty emotional.
Mm-hmm. Why did you take your son?
Because I wanted him to know who his grandfather was.
Uh-huh.
You know, and just to add to the story, I have a terrible relationship with my mother, basically because of religious reasons. She kind of cut me off from the family once I left that religion.
What religion was it?
It was Jehovah's Witness religion.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. That's really important. I had received a couple of letters about... Did you send me an email about that once?
No.
No, somebody...
I sent an email yesterday talking and wanted to know if you had a program on shunning.
Oh, yes, and there's also that on shunning, absolutely. It's real difficult. It's a real difficult thing. No, I don't have a program on shunning, but we will have to do one. So you've got two, Larry. You know, you had one. One was you lost your dad. And then, because you rejected being a Jehovah's Witness, you also kind of lost your mom.
Right.
Right? Now, here you are trying to get through life an orphan. Basically being an orphan.
True.
Yeah. What's it feel like being an orphan?
I don't know. I kind of keep myself busy. I'm married. I have two children.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any close male friends?
A few. I get along better with females.
Yeah, just what I was saying. So you, when you heard me talking a little earlier, you said, "Oh, he's got my number."
Exactly.
Right? He's got my number. I get along better with women. I got these vague kind of male friends, but nobody. There's no real buddy. There's no pal. There's no one person who you feel really solid with as a friend, who's a man.
No, there's one person I feel pretty close with, but not palsy-wowsy.
Yeah, palsy-wowsy is a good thing. That's a great description. Palsy-wowsy. What's the difference? What's palsy-wowsy like? You know, I think some people are going to object to us saying it this way, but we could do it. I like
a palsy-wowsy.
Yeah.
It's like if I wanted to go out and have a good time and just act silly, I'll call this particular person. But if I needed somebody to talk to, I wouldn't call him.
Yeah. Oh, you mean that's a palsy-wowsy guy. See, I think a friend is somebody you would call up if you wanted to talk to them, or somebody you would call up if you wanted to be palsy-wowsy. See, if you wanted to just go out and have a good time... That's one thing. If you want to go for a few drinks, or you want to go to a movie, or you want to go somewhere and your mate's not available, you're not in the mood to be with your mate, you call up your buddy. You say, hey, let's get together. Let's go listen to some jazz or taste some whatever we want to do. You know, let's go do something together. And your friend jumps at the opportunity. Says, that's a good thing. I'd like to do that.
Right.
That's a friend. And those are hard to come by, but boy, they're great when you have them. And
sure.
when you lost your dad at age 12, in a funny way, you lose the ability to make those kind of friendships. It's really tough, unless you focus on it. Unless you listen to a radio program like this, and you say, you know, I'm going to go make some friends. And actually, the truth of it is, it happens. So when a man decides that he is going to make a friend with men, he can do it. It's kind of easy. But the secret is not communication. The secret is not, let me have a deep conversation with some guy. The secret is sharing something.
Right. Yeah, I see your point. As far as deep conversations, I read a lot of books, and I find that a lot of male friends that I have, they don't read that often.
Oh, how lucky
I find women read.
How lucky they are for not reading
more than men.
Right. No, I know. And you want to share on that level with people, you know?
Exactly.
You know, but the beauty of being with somebody who is not necessarily sharing intellectually with you, unless they came with you at a different, if you and I got together, you know, and you read
right.
a book, tell me a book that you recently read.
Black Robe, White Justice.
Black Robe, White Justice, right? We can really see what that's easy, isn't it? We can understand what that's about.
Right.
Right? What's it about?
It's a story. It's a judge, Judge Bruce Wright. He's a black judge, one of the few black judges in the city. And he just writes about his experience being a black judge in the New York City court system.
How did you feel towards him in the book? How did you feel towards him as a person? Did you admire him?
Well, I'm beginning the book. I have tremendous respect for him just from the introduction.
And tremendous respect. Tell me a book you read before that.
Oh, the book I read before that is interesting. It's John Johnson, a story about John Johnson. He was an ABC News anchor man. He was a black man, and he was pretty successful, but he quit his job to take care of his ailing father, and his father abused him for many years when he was a little boy. He abused him and his mother.
And how did you feel? How did you feel towards John Johnson?
Well, I wanted to see how he did it. Because I couldn't see myself doing something like that.
Yeah. And how do you feel towards him? Do you like him?
Oh, yes.
John Johnson, two in a row, right? How do you feel towards me?
Well, I've been listening to your show for at least 3 years. I love your show.
You like my show, but you don't like me.
I don't know you. I like you listening to you.
Here's what we're doing. I'm showing you something right now. You're a man who has been searching for his dad for a long, long time. You know what I mean? You lost your dad when you were a kid. Your dad committed suicide. You keep looking in these books to see if you could find him in some kind of way. And you find me. You find me on the radio. And what I did just now was try to show you that when you get close, when you get really close, intimate-like, when you're talking personal, and you and I are talking personal because you told me about the books you read, and then I said, what do you feel about me? You had to duck it. You had to, because it's the way men who don't have fathers are like. They duck away. I can't say I like you. I can't. I have to say I like the show. I don't really know you. Yeah, but you really like me, and I know you do. I feel it. I got it in your letter the other day. So the essence of it is that we have to understand that there's a part of us that's afraid. We want to get close, but we're afraid of getting close to another man. Does that make sense to you?
That makes a lot of sense, Alma.
Yeah. Want to get close. I knew a friend who told me the other day, he said one day he and his friend were stoned. He said they were just stoned beyond belief for one reason or another. I don't know what they were doing, probably drinking too much carrot juice or something. Anyway, he said this funny thing happened to him. He's looking at his best friend, and they're just kidding around because they were being silly. He said they were so silly they were nose to nose. And you know what he said to his friend? He doesn't know where it came from. He said, don't you dare kiss me. That's what he said to his friend. This is his best friend. It's like he came out of nowhere. His homophobia suddenly appeared. Because really the truth is, he's just afraid of being close to a man. You know, I'm not suggesting anything sexual. I'm not suggesting, but we throw that up. I think that's what homophobia is about. We throw it up as a screen. Stay away from me, you person who I need the most in my life. You know? And it's really a tough thing for guys to carry around. And women got to bear the brunt of it. You know, the mates got to bear the brunt of it. They're walking around trying to relate to us, who are these guys who are just searching for something other than them. And they don't know it very often.
All right, well, thank you, Alma. I want to continue listening to your show, so I'm going to hang up.
I don't blame you one bit. What's your name?
Larry.
Larry, thank you for calling in. Stay with us and give me any more feedback you got, okay?
Okay.
And I'll let you know if I find that thing, or if I'll put the program together on shunning, because people don't understand what that is. Well, you want to explain what it is?
Well, it's basically the religion cuts you off. The family members are advised to have very limited association with you just because you change your viewpoint of the religion or its teachings.
Because you step outside of the religion. It's called shunning.
Right.
You know, you're
right.
Dead. In my family, when I was a kid, if somebody disobeyed my grandmother, she said, "You're dead." Right? That's what she said in Italian, you know, and she would just say it, and kind of that was a terrible thing, kind of, but it wasn't so bad. But they didn't mean it the way they mean it in shunning. In shunning, it's part of the discipline. This is you really don't exist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they have a false sense that it's going to bring me back, but it just makes them resent them more.
Yeah. Well, one of the silly things that humans do.
Thanks.
Thanks, Larry.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. Now, I don't mean to make it a generalization to all men. I'm not saying that all men are homophobic, nor am I also saying that all men need to be with other men. I'm saying that if you're a man who doesn't have another man in your life, think about it. If you're a woman who doesn't have a woman in your life, think about it. Let me talk about it. You know, there were a lot of women resent men who go out with friends. Right? There'll be a woman, and you'll be a woman, and you'll be, like, say, the wife of a guy. And the guy goes out with his friends, and the women express resentment. Or they trash the friend, you know, or they do things like that. Watch out. Remember, that's the original damage. He's trying to heal something. He's trying to fix something. He's working at fixing something in his life, which is really for you. It is so that he could be a better man to be with you more at ease. Contrary to what most women believe, men don't talk about women when they go out there with each other. For some reason, women think that, you know, men get together, they do a lot of locker room degrading and complaining about women. They don't, I don't believe. If you don't believe me, eavesdrop on men's conversations at restaurants. They almost never talk about women. Now, some people say that's because they don't value women, you know, but I don't think that's the issue. Maybe women think that men do that because women do spend a lot of time talking about men, which they do. They frequently, if two women get together, part of the way they avoid any intimacy with each other is to throw a conversation about a man in the middle. They talk about men. He this, he that, he this, he that, he did this, he did that. Maybe. But I think women are better at intimacy than men are. We're going to talk more about women next week. We're going to be looking further at how women relate to people. Maybe we'll even take it on tomorrow. But I still want to stick with this theme of men. Men and their relationships with each other and their relationships with the self. It's an important focus. Look, it's so clear. Who's in charge out there? Who's sending off the bombs? You know what I mean? Who's raising your taxes? Who's in charge? Well, you got to understand the guys. You got to understand them. What do you think? George W. Bush Jr., right, who's on vacation now, as I understand it, for a month at his ranch. What's our president doing on vacation for a month in a ranch? Do you know what I mean? I mean, shouldn't he be working, like, in the White House or something? Anyway, what is our president, what's his relationship like with his father? Imagine being George W. Bush Sr., and imagine being George W. Bush Jr., right? I mean, do you feel like you got a little private or not? Do you feel like you got a weenie compared to your daddy's biggie? That's what little boys feel like, right? What do you feel like? Do you feel little George W. Bush, well, I'm the president now, Dad, listen to me. No, of course not. How adequate could you feel? Well, not very adequate. So when you get up in front of an audience, what do? You imitate Daddy. You do an imitation of Daddy. You do an imitation of what you think powerful is. So men who are close to their fathers, but close only in as much as they're going for their father's approval, and they have won their father's approval, imitate their fathers. But I don't know, I know you can't see it, but when I watch George W. Bush talking or presenting or speaking, I always look for the imitation of Daddy. And he doesn't talk the same way as his father does, but he does imitate him from moment to moment. He has little offhand comments that he throws in that seem to come from nowhere. Now, why do we care about understanding his relationship with his father? Right? Why do we care about this? Because he's got his finger on the button. You know what I mean? I want to know this guy. I want to know what he's capable. In the Enneagram, those of you who know it, you know George W. Bush is a 7. They call it the Epicure. They say he's the person who, you know, goes in many directions at any one time. Tends not to complete things. Tends to try to keep things looking positive, no matter how negative they are. Tends to avoid pain on any level. It pays to understand. It really does. You know, earlier last week, somebody else made a comment about how societal differences, you know, you're always looking at the intra-psychic stuff, Armand. What about the pressure of society? Well, look at the intra-psychic stuff of the society, too. Look at the look, if you're willing to, you look at yourself, and you look at your president, and you look at your governors, and you look at the different people you elect. Look at them. When I was a kid, I used to work on Wall Street. And I guess I had specialized. They used to send me out to annual meetings. And I'd go to annual meetings, you know, stockholders' meetings, and my job was to report who's telling the truth and who's telling lies, because I could tend to see the difference between who was telling truth and who was telling lies. And I'd come back and I'd report, oh, they're a liar. They were lying through their teeth as they were reporting about this thing or about that thing. You could see it from their facial gestures, so on and so forth. Company I worked for made a fortune on just knowing who to bet on and who not to bet on. Nowadays, it would be easy. You go to an annual meeting, nobody would be telling the truth. They're afraid to. They can't tell you exactly what's going on. Everything is dressed up for the public eyes. You know, they're now living in fear of being exposed. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another of your calls before I go too far out on this tangent, because I want to talk about the government. I want to talk about society. I want to talk about the environment, too. But the thing you tune in for is to learn about the human mind. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Good day, Armand. How are you doing today?
Who is this?
This is Brian.
Hello, Brian. Good. I'm very good. I thought I recognized your voice. That's why I asked so sharply.
Okay.
Hi there, Brian. How is your dad?
Well, my dad is deceased now. And my father was an interesting person. He had an alcohol problem most of the time I was growing up in his household. However, he paid the rent or paid the mortgage on a regular basis. He always bought food for the family. He was a very nice, jolly type of person when he was doing the family thing. But he was dealing with his alcoholism and his womanizing. Mm-hmm. And I remember an incident when I was a teenager, and I feel kind of funny saying this on the air, but it's nothing that I'm going to say that is disrespectful. But what happened was that I was seduced by my next door neighbor, who was a married woman, and I felt good about it. I was 16 or something like that, and I felt good about it because you know, at that age, you know, wow, you know, you getting involved with an older woman. But I also knew that it was a wrong thing too, because this woman was married. And I saw her husband periodically. And I went to my father and asked him, I said, Dad, you know, while we was working in the garden one day, I said, Dad, you know, Miss So-and-so seduced me and gave me some, you know? And he looked at me for a moment and didn't say something, didn't say anything. And then he said, well, son, all I got to say is, hit it one good time for me too, you know? And that was the image of instead of saying, well, son, you know, is a, you know, that's really a wrong thing to do. You have, you know, how would you like somebody sleeping with your wife when you get married, et cetera, like that. He came off that way.
And
which
that
tainted me.
Yeah, that endeared you to him.
Well, you know, I thought, yeah, well, I'm cool and all that, but as I grew up, I had to be a man and know what's right and wrong. I knew that if my son come to me and asked me at that age, am I doing the right thing by sleeping around with someone else's wife as a child? For one thing, I wasn't even an adult. I was still a minor. So, you know, I would try to guide my child a certain way and give him or her the right information that would hopefully let them avoid any type of, residue from that type of experience.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. But your dad was trying to give you the best he had, and I know you don't mean it as any disrespect, but your dad wasn't much of a dad. He was there, you know, and the best he had to offer was to be there. And to be there,
he was there.
He had some warm kind of part of him, but he was also alcoholic, and he was also absent. And he was also, you know, erratic. And that was tough.
It was, I'm glad to know that my father did atone for a lot of the things that he did and became a minister the last 10 to 12 years of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really ironic because at his funeral, all these young, people, men in the church got up and spoke so highly of him as, oh, Mr. So-and-so did this and this and that. And one of the, gentlemen that was his childhood friend got up and said, oh, he's talking about the same guy I knew when I grew up, you know, because he knew him, you know, but a lot of people at a latter part of his life really respected him and really felt that he was a mentor, and that was good to know.
So, you
know,
Brian,
I just want to mention, though, about my friend, and I lost my friend to AIDS, who was a drug addict back in 97. And I was able to bring my friend up here to New York. He was living in another state where I was originally from. And I was able to bring him up on two occasions in a wheelchair.
Hmm.
And we shared a whole lot, and we was really able to touch one another on an intimate, manly level, not a homosexual level, but an intimate, manly level.
Nice.
And I really miss him so much. I mean, he's passed on since 97. I really miss the brother, and I really, you know, I even have a picture on my altar of him and all my father, the people who have deceased in my life. He's one of the persons I have on my altar that I look at on a regular basis. You know,
it's beautiful.
So I just
Brian,
wanted to share that.
Isn't it interesting, Brian, how you got to qualify to me to say, and just to let you know, it's not a homosexual relationship. You know, have we got to do that automatically as guys? It's beautiful, but what was your friend's first name?
We finally called him Gomo.
Gomo. Okay, wherever Gomo is, you know, I lost a dear friend like that myself once. One of the mm-hmm. biggest losses of my life. A partner I knew from childhood died of leukemia real fast. Young,
okay.
healthy guy, you know, and it was big, very big to me. But if Gomo could hear you now, if he could hear you through the airwaves, if he's tuning into WBAI, you know, what do you think you might want to say to him? Say some words directly to him.
I would tell him right away, thank you for the vision of the music and the vision of what it is to have integrity and to strive to be the best as an artist, and to thank him for all the hours that he spent listening to me and the things I had to confide in him, and as well vice versa. I'm glad I was able to be there for him when he needed me to as well.
Yeah, beautiful. And Brian, if you could say just 10 seconds, say hello to Dad and say, and Dad, by the way, what would you say to him?
I would say, Dad, I forgive you and thank you for being there, even though you wasn't there emotionally for us, but you was there, like a lot of fathers in our community wasn't there. So
yeah.
I want to say thank you, and I'm so glad that you was able to atone at the last part of your life.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
Bye-bye. Thank you. I'm on.
Sure.
All right, Doc.
Hey, I got to get going. I'm sorry I ran a little late. It's 1-800-575-0580 if you want a copy of today's program. And send me an email, armand@brainlink.com. Thank you, Michael, for the extra space. It was just too important to pass by. Bye-bye now.